From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear an interview with Vermont poet James Crews, whose new book is Bluebird. James Crews's poems have appeared in Plowshares, Christian Century, and The New Republic, and have been featured on Tracy K. Smith's The Slowdown and Ted Kooser's American Life in Poetry column. His first collection of poetry, The Book of What Stays, won the 2010 Prairie Schooner Book Prize and received a Forward Magazine Book of the Year citation. He's also the author of Telling My Father, winner of the Cowles Poetry Prize, and editor of the best-selling Healing the Divide, Poems of Kindness and Connection, also from Green Writers Press, who publishes his new one. He teaches at SUNY Albany and leads mindfulness and writing workshops across the country. His new poetry collection, Bluebird, chronicles the poet's life on an organic farm with his husband in rural Vermont. James Crews urges us in his newest collection to live unbound by time and mind, to grow, speak, touch, and taste at a pace that feels more real. When I spoke with James, I asked if we could begin by his reading the poem Rikpa from his new collection, Bluebird. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Rikpa. There is a mind behind the mind, smaller perhaps and much simpler. Rikpa, the Tibetans call it, meaning brightness or intelligence. Meaning we are not always what we think. Inside the mind, no chattering voice reminds me to buy dish soap and bread. No nightly worries streak across the screen of my dreaming eyes like lightning splitting the sky. Here, the black banded wings of fear flap at my back only when my life is actually in danger. Sometimes I feel my Rikpa trying to shine through, a street lamp too weak to burn off the nimbus of fog around it. Sometimes when I remember to pause on my walk down these dirt roads, I notice the dew-soaked spider webs as wide as dinner plates among the waving reeds. And when I sit alone on the screened-in porch without a book, notebook, or phone, the mountains can speak to me with the silence stone knows best.
Thank you very much for reading that.
Yeah.
I was reading that the first time through. I was reading it and really enjoying it. And then I got to that last line and I'm like, wow, I love that. The silence stone knows best. That's wonderful.
Oh, thanks.
You know, apart from just the language, which I really was drawn to, this felt relevant to me right now, which may be one of the reasons I asked you to read it. You know, I feel like so much of getting through this time is dependent on our brightness and our ability to sort of expand our minds. And that concept of Rikpa really appealed to me. Have you thought about that at all in this period?
I have thought about that a lot, actually. And so I came upon the name of this Tibetan word in a Pema Chodron book. She's an American Buddhist nun and talks a lot about meditation. And, you know, like maybe some people, I've had a meditation practice for a few years, but it feels so much more relevant and necessary right now. And just, I've always struggled with sitting in stillness. You know, as a writer, you tend to have a lot of time at home or, you know, free time that could be filled with any sort of distractions, the news, just cruising through the internet. And so I'm finding myself still struggling with how much to take in. But I think this idea of there being a larger mind behind the mind is really inviting right now, because we're forced to be very present to what's happening in our world every single day. And, you know, things are changing so quickly and not changing for the better as quickly as we might want. And so I think to hold on to this larger view, this kind of larger container in which our experience is happening, especially in the mind, is really important.
Yeah.
And I loved also the whole talking about setting aside the phone and focusing on the mountain. Literally, as I'm reading that through, I'm thinking about, okay, and we're able to focus on the mountain, but the person in the city is able to focus on the skyline or the windows across the street. I don't know. It made me feel very at peace reading this poem. I'm hesitant to assign meaning or theme to poetry that I don't know very well, but your collection has a lot of story in it. There's this farm table that shows up a few times. There are notebooks of paper. There's the allusion to the relationship with a husband, the natural world. And so, you know, I feel like I use the word gratitude too much, but I did feel like this great sense of joy and amazement in your poetry. Not just that it's all happy poetry. It's not. But it feels very clear-eyed. Right. And I'm wondering if that sounds right as far as your intention.
Absolutely. And I think the word that you used, clear-eyed, really resonates with me because, you know, there were a lot of darker poems that I considered including in this, you know, poems of grief or, you know, poems that really argue and struggle with the way our world is right now. But my intention was to sort of, and my daily intention is this too, to feel as grateful as I can for the bright spots when they show up, because, you know, darkness is going to inevitably be a part of every life. But I wanted this collection, for some reason, you know, even before all of this happened, to be one of gratitude, joy, amazement. And maybe it won't surprise you either that my next project is a whole anthology of poems about gratitude and joy.
Okay.
So the fact that you're picking up on that is not an accident.
Oh, that's
good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you have a poem, The Price, and do you mind if I just read the opening lines?
Not at all.
Snow gathers on the antler branches. A few brave cars carve twin tracks on blacktop, still hoarding its heat. Now, this one is not actually necessarily a happy poem. I think it's a poem about worry. Mm-hmm. But those images pair so perfectly. And it's funny because when I read poetry, particularly sometimes when I'm trying to prepare for a show, I'll think about the imagery. But I don't always think about how the imagery fits together. I'll think, oh, those antlers, I can really see those antlers. But in this case, the kind of pairing of these antler branches with snow gathering, which makes me think of kind of contrast in dark and light, and then the cars carving twin tracks on the blacktop. And I thought, well, those are the same thing, although they're not. I really enjoyed those images right next to each other. And I wonder if you can talk about imagery, but also the blending of images within a single poem.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it is not intentional. You know, I never really thought about that contrast between the darkness and the light, you know, the black and white with the branches and the snow and then the asphalt and the snow. But now that you mention it, that sounds absolutely perfect. but it just happens. And I think for me, the images, it's this strange alchemy that happens when you're kind of entering this moment of really close attention. And so I can remember very vividly the morning that I wrote that poem, and probably it did happen just after I had sat for meditation. And, you know, I was really anxious, as I say in the poem, about my mother having surgery and my husband's plane was landing, supposed to land later that day. You know, was he going to be safe? Is she safe? And it just, I just looked outside, and I guess those images really grounded me back in the world and kind of took me briefly, you know, it's never permanent, but it took me briefly out of my anxiety and my worry. And I think that's my relationship to the world in a way, is that I use it as this kind of grounding force. And that happened in the city when I was still living and working in Providence, Rhode Island, and kind of commuting back and forth to Vermont. So I think what you said earlier, you know, you don't have to be in a beautiful rural place to really ground yourself in the world again. It can happen almost anywhere and with almost anything.
Yeah. And later in the same poem, you allude to the black ice on the roads. And so, of course, that's
right.
Also an image of worry. It also reflects the black. And, you know, it's not necessarily pretty, but kind of. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. There is a strange beauty to ice when it's formed on asphalt like that.
Now, I was wondering, are you writing very much these days now in quarantine?
I am, yeah. You know, I never know if it's any good. but I think in the beginning especially, you know, I was kind of gifted with a lot more time because I teach at SUNY Albany, and so I'm commuting there a couple of times a week, you know, several hours a day, and suddenly I didn't have to do that anymore, and my classes are now online. But so I had a lot more time, and then spring break happened, and it felt necessary to really process it. You know, poetry is kind of the way I process my world and the way I see things, and it is kind of part of my daily practice and daily spiritual practice to kind of, you know, try to write a poem about something that's really on my mind, amazing me, weighing me down. Mm-hmm. So I am writing and still trying to find the bright spots. You know, I think there is so much suffering right now, but one of the things that I'm noticing with my students and with other people that I talk to is that they really are slowing down and noticing things more, especially mm-hmm. with the natural world. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about this very odd mix of worry, anxiety, fear, and relief at the same time.
Isn't that...
I mean, it's so strange. Yeah.
It's such an interesting juxtaposition of emotions that everybody's going through. Mm-hmm. And I think you just nailed it. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the importance of place in your work. I feel like so many of your poems tell us where the poet is as the words begin. Mm-hmm. You know, what's the setting right now? And I like that. I kind of like being able to like place myself in the landscape before I think about what the words are trying to do. Right. Is that a very conscious thing?
Maybe not always, but I think over the years it's become more and more conscious. Mm-hmm. So I worked with Ted Kooser, former U.S. Poet Laureate who lives and works in Nebraska. And, you know, he was the first Poet Laureate from the Midwest, from the Great Plains. And so place has always been really important to his work. And I think that training kind of rubbed off on me. And when I was working with him, you know, about 10 years ago, I didn't really have my place yet. and I felt like when I got to Vermont, I sort of found my place. And so I think that the place of Vermont figures so greatly because it does feel more like home to me than any other place I've ever lived. But the truth is that I feel the same way you do. I kind of like being grounded and knowing where I am when I start a poem. Sometimes it can feel, and I have received criticism that it's too easy for the reader or too simplistic to kind of let people know exactly where they are or what the situation is. But I personally don't like entering a poem feeling off kilter or having to figure it out unless that's part of the surprise, you know, unless that is super intentional. So I feel like that context is important. And, you know, this might sound egotistical, but I'm really trying to reach a larger audience. I really believe that poetry can change the way we see the world. And so I want my poems to be kind of enterable by as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I like kind of, you know, Ted Kooser always said, you're kind of with a title and maybe your first few lines, it's like a handshake, you know, you're reaching out to another person and kind of bringing them into your world.
Yeah. And I should say that when I talk about place, I don't necessarily mean, you know, here I am in South Burlington, or here
right.
I am in my backyard. Sometimes it's here I am at my kitchen table. Sometimes it's here I am at this window.
Yeah.
I mean, when I say place, I just sort of mean being and mm-hmm. a sense of where that being is happening.
Yeah,
I love that, the handshake concept.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree that it's not so much about geography, and maybe that's part of my own kind of why I turn to poetry, writing it and reading it, is to be more grounded wherever I happen to be, you know, whether it's traveling in a hotel or you know, here at the kitchen table.
Yeah. I do like to ask my guests what they're reading lately that they would recommend to listeners. It can be poetry or anything, or if you feel like talking about who your favorite authors are generally.
Sure, yeah. I just read a really great novel that that was sort of, it's called Where the Crawdads Sing, and it's by Delia Owens, I believe is her name. She's a naturalist, and it, I mean, talk about groundedness, especially in the natural world. It's about a young woman who's kind of abandoned by her family on the, in a marsh on the North Carolina coast, and she just grows up alone and, you know, has to navigate this world, not ever going to school, you know, being taught to read by a friend, and she ends up becoming this naturalist herself. So that was a really engrossing, lovely, I don't want to say escape, you know, it is more of a serious story in a way. But I'm finding that novels are really inviting right now, or any kind of engrossing story that maybe takes us out of the daily narrative.
Yeah, it's funny. I avoided that book for a while because it was so popular. And sometimes I feel like that's that in itself is a little red flag.
Same here.
And then I read that book and I was like, oh, it's beautiful. I was wrong.
Yeah. And you can see why it is so popular. You know, it is kind of a murder mystery as well. But the beauty is so overwhelming.
Absolutely. That's a great book for right now, too. I mean, a woman living in isolation and making her way.
True. Yeah, I guess maybe I could relate to that on some level. So that was a good one. And I'm really always kind of immersed in poetry. And I'm not much of a social media person, but I am paying a lot of attention to what's being put out right now and just kind of interested in what my friends are writing and creating around, you know, being quarantined or sheltered in place. Because I do think a lot of beautiful, hopeful poetry is coming out of this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wanted to refer to another one of your poems as we wind down here. You have a poem titled Neighbors. How do you feel about reading just a part of one of your poems?
Oh, I'm fine with that.
Okay. So if you were to read from Neighbors, starting at We Are Going to Have to Return to This.
Sure. So this is the last part of Neighbors. We are going to have to return to this way of life, this giving without expectation, this loving without conditions. We need to stand eye to eye again and keep asking, no matter how busy, how are you? How's your wife? How's your knee? Making this talk we insist on calling small, though kindness is what keeps us alive.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't always talk about my life on this show, but I'm going to now. I live on what used to be farmland, and we used to have no neighbors. And literally, the suburbs have grown up around us, which, you know, it's got its downside. But, you know, I've gotten to know my neighbors, and especially just in the last year, we've had a new neighborhood come up next door, and I've gotten to know that community. And all of a sudden, I'm back to not interacting with them so much because of the quarantine. And this poem really jumped out at me because I miss them, and I've never had them. I've been here for like 30 years without neighbors, and all of a sudden, I have neighbors. Anyway, this whole poem made me feel that it's so important to learn how to stay in touch with people, to connect with people we might not know well, even if it's just a wave from a distance. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on that before we end our conversation.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this poem a lot. And, you know, I wrote it actually just after the last presidential election. You know, there was so much strife and argument and negativity in the air. And you know, one of the things that I have really come to value about living in a more rural place, although you're showing, you know, you don't have to live in a rural place, but just getting to know my neighbors and being a part of a very close-knit community that, again, you can create anywhere, but just, you know, giving things to people. Oh, I have, you know, an extra loaf of banana bread, or, you know, I made all this soup, and just leaving that for people. And so I'm realizing that this poem in a lot of ways does speak to this moment, because a wave really means a lot and, you know, can especially now change someone's day, a smile from afar. And I think that's always been true. It's just now that we are kind of in this place of deprivation, it means even more. And, you know, part of the reason I wrote this too is that my husband Brad is from Vermont originally, and he was discharged from the military for being gay under Don't Ask, Don't Tell years ago. And so he came back to this community feeling a lot of shame, you know, couldn't even share that with people. And he talks about a lot about now how those waves and those smiles and those, you know, just how are you doing, literally saved his life. Mm-hmm. Just the kindness from other people. I think about that all the time. We have no idea what our seemingly small actions, our seemingly small talk can do for another person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really important because, you know, right now everybody's walking 6 feet apart, and I feel like people are so concerned about infection, but also about seeming like they're not taking it seriously, that there's a lot of eyes on the ground and there's a lot of very serious expressions. And I kind of want to tell people, it's okay. You can smile.
Right. You can make eye contact.
I won't get mad at you if you wave it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right, though. People feel like if they don't look serious and they're not taking it seriously.
Exactly. Well, I want to just mention again, the name of your beautiful new poetry collection is Blue Bird, published by Green Writers Press, that puts out so many lovely books. James Cruz, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM WBTV LP Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, host of Write the Book, a show for writers and curious readers. That was a conversation with the poet James Cruz, whose new collection is Bluebird, published by Green Writers Press. You can learn more about his work at jamescruz.net. My final Write the Book prompt for today's show is to consider Ted Kooser's advice to James Cruz. Open a poem like a handshake. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. As we live through this quarantine in which the entire world is basically on lockdown, I hope that you are able to read and write. And if possible, I hope you are able to support authors by attending their online events, reading their blogs and virtual book tours, and finding your way to their books. And for all of you who are trying to write while in isolation, do be sure to check the archives of Write the Book, because each episode offers a prompt written out on the podcast site under the recorded interview. I'd love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to interview certain authors or if you have events to announce. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We are also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and lots of other podcast sites. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. If you enjoy the show, please do rate it on iTunes, like it on Facebook, and talk about it. That's how people hear it. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week.